Welcome to Movie Dumpster Season 7, Episode 5. Today we're talking about Leprechaun 3 from 1995, directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith. And is this truly the best Leprechaun sequel? I don't know, we're gonna find out. I'm Joel Escola.
And I'm Sean O'Rourke.
Welcome to the dumpster. Viva Las Vegas. Hey.
Viva Lubden. Yes, yeah. Viva, Viva Lubden.
Viva the starfish.
Long-running lore on this show with the Leprechaun character, lovingly known as Lubden on this show.
Yeah.
Because I read it in a fucking comic or something that's what his real name is 5 years ago.
I think it was the tie-in comic for the first movie where it named him.
One of the movies,
One of them.
But if you're a longtime watcher slash listener, you know all about Lubden. He's a sick mofo.
Oh, dude, yeah.
We didn't get any Shamrock Shakes this year. Unfortunately, my local Mickey D's, you know, they got that Wick Mickey D's or whatever going on. They have that anime thing going. Yeah. So I think the anime guys ejaculated in there before Lubden got in there. So they fucked up the Shamrock Shake formula, and you know, the guys working there had to clean it out and fix it. Lubden, you know, was standing by smoking a cigarette waiting.
I don't know about that. Let's ask the starfish. What did you say? I don't know, dude. I think she's full of that green goo.
Well, you better get over to my local McDonald's that I'm not going to reveal the location of and fill up that ice cream machine, because I need some Shamrock Shake.
She's going to roll out of here.
And also, if I somehow didn't say it in that spiel and you're not reading between the lines, yes, in the movie dumpster universe, the leprechaun got his dick sucked by that starfish on the table.
You
got
to set that up for people who don't know what the Movie Dumpster Universe is. It's the show, yes. Our show, the podcast, Movie Dumpster Podcast in show universe, where we connect all these movies. And Lubden has been the Leprechaun TM has been a long running character in said universe, and he has very deep lore. And it goes all the way back to the unluckiest leprechaun, or a very unlucky leprechaun, Roger Corman classic, where Warwick Davis plays a leprechaun that's not an evil leprechaun, he plays a good leprechaun.
Right, in his fourth or fifth now time playing that kind of character,
I think he's actually making it. He actually makes that movie after Leprechaun 4?
It's either 3 or 4. Yeah. I think we might have gotten it wrong on the actual episode, or I got it wrong.
It's right in the pocket there. I think it comes out in 96 or 98. Yeah. This is 95.
Well, it's definitely post 3, for sure.
Post 3. I think it's post 4, too. But there's a starfish in that episode, and we have this long-running joke where that starfish sucks off Lubden right in his trousers there. It's Lederhosen, I think.
And it sometimes lives in there. Originally, it was Granny Van Damme's, because she's always had that kind of running sex and brothel kind of element attached to her.
Yeah. That's my job, don't you know?
So she's still actually on the hunt for that, so you better not let any crazy old ladies in here, Joe, especially if they're in wheelchairs or wearing bathrobes, or just have no clothes on whatsoever.
Also true, but long story short, that starfish milks Lubden, and then that starfish gets milked into the McDonald's Shamrock Shake machines, and for all of us to enjoy across the world.
Right, getting us back to the whole point of why I went off on that tangent.
Yes.
Thank you very much,
Joe. Yeah, reeled it right in.
The MDU lore is real. And there's actually some more MDU lore in this episode. We'll get to that
We're going to roll the dice on that, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and London's going to roll a doobie, like, back in the hood. It's going to smoke some of those shamrocks and see what happens.
But if you want some more Movie Dumpster content, you can head over to patreon.com/moviedumpster and get an ad-free audio version of the show for only $2 a month. We also have some commentary tracks and some live watch-alongs for the $5 and $10 tiers with some other dumpster goodies for you. So if you're so inclined, give us a shot. Support your favorite show.
And for no money at all, leave a like on this video if you're watching here on YouTube, and share it with your friends. And if you're not subscribed, please hit that button, and then you'll know every time a new episode is out. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, leave us that 5 stars. Maybe write a review. It really does help. Get the word out on the show. Get us into more eyeballs, eardrums, everything in between.
And if you want to keep up with the Dumpster Boys' whereabouts, you can follow us at Movie Dumpster on your favorite social media platform, or you can go to moviedumpsterpodcast.com and see our schedule and what shows we got coming up. We got a great show coming up with Tapes from the Crypt at the Philomoka on April 20th. There's going to be a screening of Heavyweights, followed by a live Q&A session with Sean Weiss. So you don't want to miss that one. And we know some of you came out to see us at Monster Mania, and we also had some Movie Dumpster themed hot sauces, Sean. So we're gonna hawk that real quick, because it's St. Patrick's Day, and of course, we got to talk about, it wouldn't be St. Patrick's Day without Rawhead.
No.
Rawhead Red, by the way. This is a homegrown, homemade, hand-assembled hot sauce from you boys in the dumpster. What is this? We got raspberries with Fresno and Carolina Reaper peppers in this hot sauce. So Rawhead's going to give the old hot raspberry, baby. You know what I'm saying?
He is God!
Yeah, we also got our dumpster slime as well, which is our least hot sauce. And this is pineapple, jalapeno, and hot banana peppers hot sauce. We're not sure how many of each of these we have left, but if you want to grab one, you can head over to moviedumpsterpodcast.com and get some yourself.
So I wish we could play some Irish music right now to go in theme with this film. Like every other St. Patrick's Day movie we've covered, they always open up these movies with Irish music. I don't want to get copyright claimed instantly on this episode, but I feel like in the back of your head, you're kind of listening to that as we get into this review.
Doing the Irish jig, yeah.
Well, under this table, no one can see it. That's what I've been doing the whole time.
Well, that's yeah, it's also true, yeah.
This carpet really hides the sound.
Well, speaking of music... Dennis Tenney does the score for this, and it is not Irish whatsoever.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Ding, 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 ding.
It's
like low-budget Danny Elfman casino music.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not hyper-memorable, but it's fine.
I remember this music.
You do?
A lot.
Okay.
I think, yeah. Out of all the things in this movie, that's one of the things that sticks out to me the most.
I mean, not to just steal your thunder on that one, but it's definitely lubbed in walking around Vegas.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, that's the funniest part. It's it's a lot more screen time than Jason walking through Manhattan, that's for sure.
Right, actually, there, you're yeah, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, let's welcome back director Brian Trenchard-Smith, shall we?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
He's been with us on the show for such great classics as Leprechaun 4, In Space, and Night of the Demons 2.
Two films I did not like. Leprechaun 4, on some level, at least has the weirdness factor. I didn't like it, but I would rewatch it. Again, those effects hold up like dog shit on a Blu-ray, especially when he grows big. They need to revisit that transfer. They need to fix that shit.
I'm going to get to my final thought on what the best sequel of the Leprechaun franchise is at the end, because that's what the question we're answering today.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But I really like 4. I like 4 better than this one.
We'll talk about that. I mean, I definitely like this better than 4. Yeah. What am I even saying? Go back and listen to that episode. but I still think, we'll hold that thought.
I definitely like this movie better than Night of the Demons 2.
Oh, well, that a fucking doubt. I don't like that movie at all, but minus the snake shit.
There's something about Night of the Demons 2 that I'm just not into. I mean, go back and listen to the Night of the Demons 2 episode to get my full thoughts. It hasn't really changed that much, because we did discuss it on Night of the Demons 3.
Yeah,
I think as well.
You were a little softer on it, I think, since that second one. But even that second one, I don't remember you being that, not loving it, but not being that harsh on it.
No, I wish it was a little bit better.
Sure.
You know?
It is, speaking of transfers, it is kind of cool that all three of those films, they get the 4K treatment just on that note.
Which is crazy to me, because Night of the Demons 1, 2, and 3 have brand new Blu-ray releases, and I don't think Leprechaun has a real proper restoration.
That's what I'm saying.
I know there's a Blu-ray. Lionsgate owns all of these films now.
They put out that compilation Blu-ray, which I feel like most Leprechaun fans probably have already picked up. If not, it's usually pretty cheap.
Do you have it?
I have it.
How are the transfers?
They're good. I'm just saying, like, specifically 4, I didn't rewatch it for this viewing, but when I watched it when we did that review a couple years back, I had bought the Blu-ray set at the time, and I just remember specifically just they didn't go crazy like the My Bloody Valentine 4K where they fixed up all those effects. It's just like, I remember specifically that movie, the effects were just like, ooh, baby.
Like real bad.
They didn't hold up great. And I mean, that movie's already cheesy, whatever. They're in space. Don't overthink it, Sean. But I thought that this one looked pretty good. The only time that I thought things looked bad was just because they were always going to look bad. There was only so much you're going to do with the first direct-to-video Leprechaun movie. But I think, generally speaking, especially the practical effects hold up really well in this film.
I think so. Well, all the practical effects. I mean, it's Gabe Bartolo's coming back again for this. And if there's one constant through these movies, through these specific, the Trimark movies,
right.
Specifically, it's Gabe Bartolos and Warwick Davis bringing the goods each and every single time. I mean, they launched. We're going to get to that in a second. But I want to jump back to Brian Trenchard-Smith real quick.
Sure.
There's something I don't think we've mentioned about him, but he's also he's not a bad director at all.
Yeah.
And he's actually directed a bunch of stuff that I didn't even realize he did. He did BMX Bandits. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, no. I did see that.
It's pretty
though,
good.
Yeah.
And The Quest with I forget it. I always forget his name, but Elliot from E.T.
Okay.
Which at the time was a pretty big deal because he was in E.T., so that, sure. I mean, that was a huge star at the time. But he also does Dead End Drive-In, which is another good one that we should probably check out. But he also did this movie, Atomic Dog. Now, I've never seen it, or maybe I think I rented it one time, but I can't for the life of me remember it. When I saw the cover, I was like, fuck, I need to go back and rewatch this because it's like this green cover. It's so obnoxious and I love it. It looks like a husky or something with with like a big like D in its mouth and it says like, or a big A. It's biting one of the letters.
Oh, okay.
And it says like Atomic Dog.
Huh.
So it's like, I don't know what, cashing in on man's best friend or something?
That might be in the, we never actually pulled the trigger on this event month idea because I just don't even know if anyone would watch it. But if we ever do the fucking, the dogs in something, dogs in movies month, maybe that's one that'll get tackled in some capacity. There's a couple on the list, folks, believe us. We have a list.
When animals attack?
I think it was specifically a dog thing. That John Voight one where he's the dog and Bob Clark directed it. It's been a thought for a couple years.
Where he's like, it's like the White House dog or something, the president's dog.
Maybe that Atomic Dog. Maybe add that to the list of dog movies.
Yeah. So yeah, there's not too much cooking with Leprechaun 3. It was literally just one of those things where it was like, we got a franchise, baby. We're Vidmark Entertainment, Trimark Entertainment. And it's, you know, the first Leprechaun movie was a huge success. Despite all odds, which I'm going to talk about in a second, because I want to talk about this lovely book that I just finished. But just real quick with Leprechaun 3, this is, like you said before, this is the first one that goes direct to video. Right. Now, the first movie was supposed to go direct to video, and they ended up doing theatrical release, and the second one did so well that they put it out theatrically as well.
Which is like, then why doesn't the third one go theatrically? After viewing it, I could maybe think of a few reasons why. Just from a production standpoint, I guess is what I mean by that. But yeah, it's kind of surprising. I mean, I don't know how deep you're going to go into this in a second when you start talking about I Need Me Gold, the book there. But I always had remember reading, and I probably talked about this on the two commentary tracks we did for 1 and 2 on Patreon for $5 and $10 tiers, patreon.com/moviedumpster. But that first film originally was conceived as a PG film.
Yes.
And then was changed kind of in post-production. They added some more gore to the kills. They probably even shot a few more things. But that wasn't, it kind of turned into something else and then became this huge franchise. Well, huge maybe in air quotes. I mean, they did get, what, 6 or 7 films and a couple remakes. So I guess I consider that huge.
This franchise made a shit ton of money.
Right, yeah. But it's just kind of crazy to me that those first two movies, the first one's supposed to be PG, turns into something else. The second one, as far as I know, was R from the get-go, and I think that's why it works so well. Plus, the plot's really good. And then this one is just like, what am I trying to say here? It just goes direct to video after all this success. And was this rated R?
It was rated R. Okay, this is the highest grossing direct to video movie of 1995.
I guess because people were wondering why wasn't this in theaters? I got to rent it.
I mean, again, we were on the LEP train, dude. It's 1995.
Right, okay.
Because the first one comes out in 92.
That is insane to me,
so,
right?
Yeah. I want to answer your question about why this went direct to video, or at least my opinion, especially like towards the mid-90s. And a big part of that is from what I learned reading this book by B. Harrison Smith, The Making of the Movie Leprechaun, I Need Me Gold, which I cannot recommend this book enough. If you haven't seen this or checked it out yet, it came out last year, right before the... He mentions it in the book, and as he's writing it, that's how I have frame of reference, but it came out right as Avatar 2, on the eve of Avatar 2 being released.
Okay.
So it's fresh. Like, it's a pretty new book, and I got it last year, but I didn't get to it last year. So
sure.
I was like, shit, we got another Leprechaun episode coming up. I gotta hit it up. That being said, Vidmark Entertainment... started their Trimark brand, which was their theatrical production, in-house production shit.
Huh.
So Vidmark was the distribution company.
Okay, got it.
Like, they're the people who picked up Warlock from New World Pictures and then released that theatrically, but they didn't put any money into it. They bought the movie, released it in theaters, it did well, and then they released it on video and it did well.
Solid purchase on their part.
Leprechaun was the first movie that they make in-house, like under their production company, Trimark.
We'll be right back.
And it was always set to go direct to video because they couldn't lose because of the market at the time. Mm. And what I mean by that is video sales at that time, that pocket right there, from the 80s to the mid-90s, you could always make your money back on video.
Well, look at the porn industry especially, well, but
that,
yeah.
Well, that too. Yeah, yeah, you could rent it and take it home and buy it if you wanted it. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's the same thing with... It's the same thing with these movies. You can rent these movies. And that's where a lot of the money came from. A lot of the money came from not the theater sales or the ticket sales, it coming to home video and people renting the shit out of it, and people and video stores buying units and then renting them. Mm. And then, of course, alternate cuts that got put to cable, and then they made a shit ton of money on cable, too. So you either rent the movie or you watch it on TV. That was the only way to do it. And we grew up in that era.
Yeah.
We grew up in that era where you couldn't just go, you either go to the movies, but you're too little to go to the movies by yourself
to see
the film, or you rent it from the video store or you watch it on TV. And when you watch it on TV, it's probably cut if it's on USA or Sci-Fi or something.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily always have HBO or something.
If you were lucky, you did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you gotta jump up and pause the commercials. I mean, now you wish you never did.
Yeah.
But at the time, you didn't know any better, so you're jumping up when that UPN logo comes up or that frog starts dancing on the screen.
There was no YouTube. There was no Tubi. There was none of this shit. You either watched it when it came on TV or you went to the video store to rent it.
I don't know how we fucking survived. I'm saying that in my mid-30s. I probably sound pretentious, but holy shit.
Oh, man.
Horrible time, Stone Age, for technology
people. I
don't
think so. I think it was great.
For movie fans.
I think it was great because I can keep up with what was coming out.
I guess that is true.
I mean, when you think about it, there is so much shit
coming out
that just comes out, and people are just making shit. There's so much white noise.
True.
It's very hard to dig through to find the gems.
You almost have to literally put like blinders on to find what you're looking for, like intentionally. That's a good point.
How many times have you been sitting on Netflix and being like, I don't know what to watch? Or you're on Tubi and you're like, I don't know what to watch.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck to watch because there's too much shit. You know what I mean? And that has to do with also like TV too. We've talked about this before, briefly, I want to digress into streaming TV shows and how they were all released at one time and you can binge watch it over. I used to get so pissed off because people what was it? I think it was Daredevil was all released at once and I didn't get a chance to watch it. And
that was spoilers.
That was the first time that I got impacted by spoilers, where some asshole had nothing fucking going on and watched all the fucking episodes on a Saturday and just spilt the fucking beans about it. And it was that was so aggravating to me.
I remember when Stranger Things dropped, like they've been doing it for a hot minute at that point, but that was one where I was like, I wasn't even that into it yet, but like I think by the second season, then I was really into it. So I was like, I gotta watch this the day it comes out or I'm gonna get spoiled. It's like a video game. I gotta play the whole game or I'm gonna get spoiled. I've kind of broken myself of that,
but I totally got
that mentality because you wanna get fucked, especially if it's something you're looking forward to or you just wanna go in blind. It's hard.
It's fucking stressful.
Especially if you're a fan of this show where we just spoil literally every movie, but hey, sorry, I guess. Not really.
Because that's the show. But like, we're not doing it all together anymore. You're not
like
waiting,
a weekly show.
Yeah, you're not waiting for Friday at 8 o'clock for fucking Steve Urkel to do his thing, right? You know what I mean? Or whatever. Or UPN or something to show that movie of the week, or fucking, something to premiere on the Sci-Fi Channel or something, you know?
Something weird you've never heard of that's just on, or you find in the TV guide. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I've seen that discourse pop up a lot more lately, especially with, not that Best Buy's where people necessarily were going to buy their DVDs. I mean, I was because, credit card, cha-ching.
Well.
When they got rid of that, a lot of people were like, oh, the death of physical media. And it's like, yeah, but we have like Vinegar Syndrome. We have like Error 4444. We have like all these novelty shops. And we still have the big guys like Criterion and Sony. They're not going away.
Let me tell you something about Best Buy and their catalog of movies.
Well, they weren't great to begin
with. They've had shit for a long time.
You're right.
You're talking to somebody who
you were hunting, probably.
We're talking to, you remember, I used to come out of Suncoast with a fucking stack of shit
the
this
list.
High.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, Best Buy was never the place for me to be like, oh, they're going to have all the stuff that I want. You know what I mean? And they were on a decline for a while.
For a decade.
But they were carrying a lot less shit throughout the whole time.
For a long time.
So I don't know why everybody was like, oh my God, not Best Buy, it's over.
I think it's just kind of in the zeitgeist of collectors or people that are fans of movies in general or that are on the internet and trying to be part of this community or whatever you want to refer to it as. I just see that and they get nervous, and I totally understand that. But I guess my whole point, just to wrap it around to what you brought up about streaming, is like, streaming's really nice, but you know, they don't always have everything. And then it's that case of what you just said, where you got to pound through things. Where it's like, with Leprechaun, let's just kind of take it back to that. It's like, I don't know if you could watch these all streaming. I mean, maybe they're on Shudder. I don't know, again, who owns it. Lionsgate. They don't have their own streaming service, probably.
No, they don't.
Thank God they don't. We don't need another one.
But I don't know why we haven't got these on, like, some special edition 4K from, like, Shout Factory. Because Shout Factory always licensed, like, Lionsgate shit.
Instead, you got to buy the Blu-ray or have those individual DVDs, but it's like those, for better or worse.
It's like those shitty packs. And, like, this was such a huge thing. The Pot of Gore collection, when that came out on DVD, that was, like, huge. This is, like, back when the Puppet Master set first came out
on
DVD. Yeah. I still have that one upstairs, too.
I hope I completed that thought about streaming. I hope that didn't just end in a incomplete sentence. But
no, but I think the basic takeaway was, like, it's so accessible now, and there is this stress of keeping up with all the media.
Oh, that's what you were saying.
But like, even at the when it first started, it was very stressful, and you even said that. But then we've kind of separated ourselves on that because there's nothing we can fucking do about it.
It's like a mental struggle. People that want to watch TV or movies, if you're doing it through the internet, you got to deal with that bullshit or pony up the cash and just buy the fucking disc.
Yeah. But I don't think physical media,
it's never going away,
is ever going
not
away.
Not in our lifetime.
And
at least.
Like, Target has a better selection of DVDs than Best Buy ever had.
And it's not even great.
No, I know, but like, what? Because you want a Steelbook? I don't give a fuck about a Steelbook.
I used to care about that.
I don't care. I mean, it's cool if I got it, but like,
I got that Mortal Kombat Annihilation Blu-ray. There was a double pack.
But like, I care more about the movie. Or if you really want to, if you want a Steelbook, go to fucking Zavvi or some shit.
Sure. No.
You
know. Yeah.
So with that being said, Trimark wanted to put one of their first movie in the theater, and because they knew that they would make the money back on video, because that was the lay of the land at the time.
They would have lost more money if they put it out. Okay, I was kind of thinking that.
Well, they made $10 million at the box office, and that was before the video deals.
Oh, you're talking about the first one.
The first one.
Oh, okay.
And that was before
you.
The video deals, and that was before the cable, the network television deals.
Right.
Just to come back to the book, like,
sure.
The book is more about filmmaking and independent filmmaking and the struggles and trials and tribulations you go through with the executives and the production company, and how to get a movie made, and what are the fucking hoops you got to jump through, and the concessions you need to make and stuff.
Does he mention Mark Jones in there at all?
It's all about Mark
Jones.
Oh,
it is. Okay. Good.
Yeah. And
that's what I'm just curious. That's what you would want to hear.
And like
the creator of Leprechaun.
Well, to that point, I wanted to bring that up too, because like, we bust people's balls on the show for the sake of comedy, but
yeah,
like,
90, I mean, Daniel Baldwin can go eat crow, but yeah 99% of the time,
we bust
people's
balls for the sake of comedy. But like, Mark Jones is an incredible dude, and he's not only smart, but like, he was an animator and a writer for some of our favorite cartoons as kids growing up. He was one of the lead writers on fucking Scooby-Doo, dude.
Like the 70s, like the OG?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, this guy was decorated before he made Leprechaun, okay? And he got into, well, I'll let you read the book, but he got into Vidmark and Trimark and by way of people that he knew and producers and stuff like that, and they made Leprechaun, but they gave him a lot of shit for it. And he knew exactly what he wanted. He knew that he wanted Warwick Davis. He knew that it had to be makeup. He knew he had to do Gabe Bartolus's makeup. He knew exactly what the movie he wanted to make and what exactly it was. And
he also was smart enough to just say, hey, I want the entire fucking rights to this character so that when you make 6 sequels, I get paid for each one and don't have to lift a fucking finger.
Well, I'm sure that's in the contract somewhere, but it was
very smart.
It was a labor of love. He knew what he was making and it was successful. And the studio execs were nervous about it the whole time, but they ended up making all the fucking money in the world.
And they got a franchise.
They wanted a franchise and they got a fucking franchise, I guess is what I'm saying. And then go all the way back to your point that we were talking about before we started this digression was why it was Leprechaun 3 direct-to-video. Probably because at that time it wasn't financially viable to put it in theaters again after the second one didn't do as well in theaters, so they just put it straight to video and they made a shit ton of money.
Okay, so that's what I was thinking earlier. I guess I misunderstood what you were saying, but yeah, that's kind of my thought also, is that they were not going to make the money back. So it's like, fuck the thousands of horror fans, let's just make all their money on the back end.
But just to your point too, like, he is an icon, and I know
there's more than thousands of people that wanted to see this. That was a very bad analogy. Anyway,
I feel like people don't, you know, when you talk about Freddy and Jason and Michael and stuff like that, I feel like people don't mention Warwick Davis as a leprechaun, but I would put him there.
I mean, they are slasher movies. They kind of, I mean...
Wasn't the original intent for this, but yeah.
No, well, especially one, I mean, you could make less of an argument for that, but I feel like they definitely turned into, especially this film is definitely a slasher movie.
Oh, into the second one. It was over.
But you're right. Like, you don't hear as many people talk. Like, people like that are into horror are like, yeah, Warwick Davis, but it's not like he was an unknown either. Like, he's done Star Wars again. He was in Willow.
He was an A-list actor.
So he was well-known, and he's done a ton of, like, small parts at that point. Mm. No pun intended, Jesus.
Little Cops. We got to make Little Cops.
Little Cops. You were talking about on a live show.
Phil Fondacaro and Warwick Davis in Little Cops. TM.
Right. Billy Barty is the stuntman or something.
Billy Barty's passed away.
Well, this is a hypothetical anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that because with Warwick being this character, and you could tell it's Warwick, but it's also a very iconic character, especially over these many films that he appears in. He was, like, slightly different in each one, which I always kind of appreciate because it's technically not the same leprechaun. But
depending on who you talk to.
Well, right. But, like, you know, for someone that's nothing against Robert Englund, I think he is very famous now. But at the time, it's like he wasn't known for Willow. You know, he didn't have, like, some big film, like, you know, Feather in His Crow, but it's like, you're right, Warwick, outside of the circles of people watching this show, I feel like Leprechaun kind of gets kicked under the rug, and it's unfortunate, because I think they're generally speaking pretty good, and Warwick's great in them. He's super memorable.
Oh, he's
fantastic. More memorable than fucking Michael Myers. Yeah. Most boring fucking slasher killer ever.
Well, they basically made a little Freddy is what they did.
Which is smart.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So just real quick, just a couple small things. The writer... Of course, we've seen this happen time and time again where they like Trimark was like, all right, Leprechaun in Vegas, go. And they like had like a fucking lottery for these people to like send scripts in, like spec scripts in.
What?
Yeah, that's what happened. And this guy who wrote the script sent in his script and they picked it, but he had never seen the previous movies before. So that's why we get that switch of lore and there's some other shit in this. So like I never really understood why the fuck you wouldn't watch previous movies in the franchise that you're writing for to write your script. I'll never understand that.
That seems to be a theme on this show, too. Yeah. I feel like we've covered a few films where that has come up and we're just always scratching our heads.
Like, what the fuck? Why?
I guess they still made the fucking movie and it mostly works, but yeah, you would think just watch the movies. It's taking 2 or 3 hours. They're not that long.
We posed the question in the beginning, what is the best Leprechaun sequel? Now, this is Warwick Davis's favorite Leprechaun movie.
I mean, just based on what they have him do in this film, I'm sure it was. He's fucking going around Vegas. He's being a laugh the entire time.
He's had a lot of creative control on all the movies, like previous, like up until this point, he worked with Mark on the second one, or the first one, and he worked with I forget the director of the second one, but this was very much more, the third one's very much more like comedy driven.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what he liked about it, so.
But like Warwick Davis is a pretty funny motherfucker. He had like that whole TV show with Ricky Gervais,
yeah, Life's Too Short. Yeah.
So I'm not surprised he enjoyed his time in this film because, again, he's limericking like a motherfucker. Most of the limericks are pretty funny in this one. There's like one or two that are kind of dark, but they're almost always just dark comedy at the worst, honestly.
It's a lot of fun. It gets a little redundant for me in this one in particular, but we'll get to it.
He wants his shilling!
There's one last thing I wanted to mention before we get totally out of the BTS here. There's a fucking director's cut of Leprechaun, the first one.
Wow.
Where Mark Jones, I think, has a copy of it. And that's something that I would love to see because we mentioned you mentioned in that commentary track on patreon.com/moviedumpster of the first Leprechaun movie, that whole sequence with the cop was shot or requested by the execs to be put into the movie.
Huh. Where he gets pulled over and all that?
No, where he's running through the woods and he like breaks his neck.
Right, yeah.
But there's a lot more funny, goofy, lighthearted, Scooby-Doo-esque shit in the movie. Like, there's a whole sequence where like Leprechaun gets like run over by a truck and he's like, it's like Wile E. fucking Coyote like in the dirt. Like the outline with like a tire mark over him.
That's the PG version,
I guess.
And
then he gets up. Yeah, he gets up and like rides a tricycle after him. So I would be, there's like 15 to 20 minutes that were cut out of that movie. So I would love to see that one day. You know what would be sick? If we could.
Morton Jankel cut that bitch.
Well, no, if we could call up Mark Jones and be like, dude, let's do a double feature. We'll show it at one of the local theaters. We'll do a director's cut of Leprechaun and we'll do Rumpelstiltskin double feature. That would be fucking banger. Mark Jones night.
I have to get Chris Barr involved with that one, maybe. Midnight Madness.
Could be, or somebody with a 35 millimeter projector, depending.
We know a few folks.
We know a few folks. So with that being said, let's get into Leprechaun 3. Can you plot crunch this for us, please, Sean?
So Lupton's back. The Leprechaun is back again, magically returned by somebody's stupidity. This time he's a statue and is instantly transformed back into his true self. And he's in Vegas, like we've already talked about. And this time he's just kind of looking for his lucky coin, one of his coins that magically just kind of roll out of his fucking cauldron on the way out of this pawn shop. Like Gollum's ring, essentially. And then it's just kind of like his excuse for killing people throughout the film is that they take his coin, make wishes, and then he kind of dishes out punishment. And then we also have this little wrinkle where our protagonist, Scott, accidentally gets some leprechaun blood inside one of his cuts.
Or his bites.
A bite that he gets from Lupton, and now he's turning into a leprechaun. And then that's also a were-leprechaun appears, and they battle to the death or something.
Question mark, dude.
But that's basically the movie. Leprechaun in Vegas, where leprechaun, they fight over the gold. There's some love. Kinda.
Forced love angle?
Yeah.
This is your favorite.
My favorite trope in movies, even more so than the forced love story, yeah. We'll get to Mitch and his fucking ass.
So we open up on Gupta's pawn shop.
Oh my God, I have to comment on this.
Gupta Baggins.
Yeah, Gupta Baggins, he's in fucking Underhill.
He loses that, he picks up that shilling like you were just saying.
Oh, well, he does. But this actor, he's Spanish, but he's definitely wearing brown face. At one point when this man's sweating, trying to hide from the leprechaun, I swear to God, it looks like it's dripping off his face. His name is Marcelo Tubert.
Tubert.
He's an Argentinian actor who moved to Los Angeles. He's not Indian. He's doing a very on-the-nose Indian accent. His name's Gupta. I don't know. That's all I'll say about it. Brian Trenchard Smith, or whatever the fuck your name is, I don't know about that one. Maybe should have just made him Spanish.
I mean,
hired an Indian actor.
Well, he's a brown guy playing a brown guy, so I think that's fine.
Sure. he's also already... Actually, he's not in the MDU, but he is in another film that we are fans of. He's in Tremors 2. He's Sergeant Ortega.
Oh, that's right.
Again, not Indian.
No.
He's not doing the accent there, but he's the guy that comes in.
Well,
and
he's
gets
Mexican in that.
Yeah, yeah, he comes and gets Fred Ward. He's like the sergeant in charge and gets Fred off his ass.
And he's like, what do you need? Do you need anything? Yeah.
Yeah,
he gives
that
him all his
out,
shit.
Yeah. But anyway, get over that fucking hill, Underhill. he's sitting there and he's waiting basically for something to happen. And this fucking one-eyed, one-legged, one-armed man.
Yeah, flying purple people eater comes in,
with this fucking sack dragging this thing in like he's got fucking bricks in a bag.
He's got no leg. He's got a fucking hook hand. He's got an eye patch and a crutch.
That's what I'm saying. A one-eyed, one-armed, one-legged man.
One-eyed, one-legged,
this is like
old guy, merchant, peddler, I don't know.
Character that doesn't come back and is just there for this one scene.
He drops off this fucking leprechaun statue and he's like, it's a good luck charm. Can you give me $20 so I can get some gas and get the fuck out of here?
The guy goes, I ain't even worth 10. Fine, 20. And he's like happy as a pig and shit and just leaves. And it's like, okay. And he's like, yeah, by the way, as he's like counting the money.
Don't touch that medallion.
Whatever you do, don't touch the medallion. Second he walks out the door, fuck that. Pulls the medallion off. I'm like, okay.
And out comes Warwick. Dude, what I appreciate about this is we don't waste a fucking second.
No,
we are right in there.
And funnily enough, in the sequel to, well, actually the second sequel to this, so In the Hood, A Leprechaun in the Hood, basically same kind of setup where he's a statue with a necklace, although the necklace becomes a much more integral plot point than this film.
Well.
In that movie.
Well, it's a pretty integral to this.
It is, but they're not trying to, like, basketball shoot this thing over his neck like they are in that movie.
Well, because there's a different way to dispatch him in this.
Yeah.
But this is the first film to introduce that.
The medallion idea
that he's a statue or whatever.
Or
can be turned to stone, rather.
Yeah, it turns him to stone, and it also kind of works as a repellent against him. But, yeah, he's out and about, and he instantly goes after this guy with the shillelagh.
He jumps on his back and bites his fucking ear off, Mike Tyson, like Holyfield.
Well, yeah, Holyfield, that's what I thought of instantly.
And, the first line that Warwick Davis gets is, I love Indian food, so spicy! And that shit always cracked me up.
Well, he bites his fucking ear, and then he takes a big, huge bite out of his foot, rips his whole big toe off.
Dude, he fucking takes his big toe and bites the whole thing off.
He's chewing on on that, and it's just like, oh, God, help me.
Beats the shit out of him with the shillelagh.
Beats him up with the shillelagh.
So Gupta has the fucking medallion, and he's like, get it away from me. So he takes his gold. He's like, I'll be gone from here or whatever. Drops that fucking coin, man. That shilling.
Right, because he's got the cauldron and the pot of gold, but a shilling, like I said, falls off.
Yeah. And he has 100, exactly 100 gold coins in his little pot.
I don't know about that. That looks like way fucking more than that. Personally, I mean, listen, I failed pre-calculus, but I did pretty good at math in high school. There's more than 100 in
there.
You
were good at guess the jelly beans, right? Is that what you're telling me?
No.
Okay.
But there's definitely more than 100 coins because he gets up to 99 and then he's like, where's my coin? One. Where's my shilling?
Yeah, there's one. Well, there's 100 in there.
Yeah, and then the guy's like looking at it in a magnifying glass like, ooh, this has got to be worth something.
Well, he's intent on getting the rest of that gold, dude.
Yeah, he's like scheming like, yeah, I'm going to get that son of a bitch.
This is so great, too, because like, he freaks out and the guy, you know, Warwick tells him he's a leprechaun or whatever. But he has, like, this fucking, like, old, like, Windows CD-ROM full of folklores and legends that he boots up.
Yeah, the Flash, the game or whatever.
And he starts, and it's like, oh, welcome to the world of leprechauns. And
I'm Mr. O'Grady.
Yeah, I'm Killy O'Brien, and I'm going to tell you all about the leprechauns. They love potatoes, and those little things are, you know, if you steal a leprechaun's gold, they got to grant you one wish.
They love shoes, by the way.
I'm going to tell you all about the rules of the leprechaun as we go through this.
They did carry that over, by the way, the shoe thing.
I appreciate that.
When he bites the toe off, he's first admiring the man's shoe. He's like, oh, I love these things.
Yeah. So we get some pretty good gore stuff here. I don't want to jump around too much because there's a lot of cutting back and forth.
There is.
So I just want to like wrap Gupta up real quick.
Yeah, because he lasts like 30 or 40 minutes, but it's really just a couple of scenes that are intercut between other things happening for just so the timeline matches up.
I mean, it's all right the way that it's paced and the way that it's cut. I think it's fine. But
it just by the end of it, you think this guy's going to survive and then just Lubby just instantly he breaks his neck with a fucking phone cord.
He shoots him with a fucking arrow.
Oh, yeah. The statue of this, like, Cupid that he magically telepathically controls and fires the arrow, even though it's just a statue and it would, whatever, magic.
There's some good leprechaun magic in this, because, like, his glamour stuff is really on display here in this film, because, like, he, like, shows, like, himself in, like, a mirror, and, like, Gupta's, like, looking at that.
That's pretty good. That made me think of Jurassic Park a little bit.
With the raptors.
Yeah.
But he shoots him in the arm, and then he just beats the shit out of him with his shillelagh. And there's a part where Gupta, like, wants to make a deal with him, and he's like, all right, give me half your gold, and I'll give you this medallion. And he's like, are you fucking crazy? He's like, all right, sure, no problem. You can have half my gold, sure.
Yeah. But then that's when he's, like, at the computer trying to find out the last piece of trivia he needs.
He, like...
drops the coin.
Lubden, like, uses a fishing rod pulls the medallion away and then beats this man mercilessly. And then they, like you said, chokes him to death with a fucking telephone cord.
While it's saying, leprechauns love potatoes, by the way.
That's
going to
be important later.
And then Lubden's like, because he has baby's day out vision, but it's because... not because he can't see below his knees, it's like reverse. It's just because he's really short. He can't see the fucking coin on the desk. He's just where's my coin? It's like a foot above him.
And he could smell it. I don't know why it's not right there.
Well, he doesn't have that power yet, Joe. He hasn't gotten to that part in the script.
Oh, gotcha. Well, he's just...
his selective gold-smelling trait.
His bloodlust got to him, right?
He was licking the blood off the shillelagh. He got too distracted.
So we get introduced to Scott and Tammy. Now, Scott is this kid who's going to college, I guess, in Nevada somewhere.
He's very naive. He's just stopping in by Vegas because why not? I'm in the area.
He is like small-town USA kid who's never been like very sheltered. You know what I mean?
Right, and that's kind of the gag of his character. Yeah.
Fish out of water kind of thing, and he's like a young kid. He's going to college. He meets this hot chick by the side of the road who just happens to be a magician's assistant at... this casino called the Lucky Shamrock.
She's just, by the way, real quick, she's like broken down on the side of the road and this guy's just not paying attention and almost careens into her. And then he's like, yeah, what's wrong with your car? She's like, yeah, it won't start. And he like opens up the hood and he's like, oh yeah, I figured it out. You don't have an engine.
Because it's a bug. You get it?
Yeah.
I don't think they put engines in the back of VW bugs since like fucking 1972.
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know. You were talking about Urkel earlier. Urkel had it like that.
I'm not a car guy, so I don't know when they stopped doing that.
Same. But then he finds where the engine actually is, and he's like, I have no idea what I'm looking at, so I guess I'll drive you.
Well, no, it's a joke, because clearly the V-dubs didn't have they had the engine in the back, but he's like, oh, you blow a rod before? She's like, right. Excuse me? And he's like, no, pistons and rods. Something's fucked up in there.
Yeah, he's trying to sound cool, but he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So, yeah, they join up. And she's like, well, I got to get to my job at the Lucky Shamrock.
Yeah, can you take me there? So they're flirting and shit. And
kind of.
And she takes him in to see the casino, because he's like, oh, I've never been in a real casino. Like, can I check it out? Can you show me, please? And she's like, all right, well, go in, look around, and then get the fuck out, all right?
You can't gamble.
I'm going to get fired because you're not 21 or something.
Also, I know, low-budget film, they got to do what they got to do, but they could have spent maybe $50 more on that vinyl banner. It just... get it to look a little better, you know, paint around. I don't know. I'm not the expert here, but it looks like shit on this very nice, expensive building, this vinyl sign that just is Lucky Shamrock. But hey, they didn't want to blow their whole budget on that. They had to pay Warwick, I guess.
This kid is walking around this casino like he's in fucking Disneyland. Like,
his
it's like
mouth is open. Like,
he's like, wow, look, there's people playing slots. I never saw that before in my life. Look, crap tables and all this shit. And it's like, are you a gambler?
We find out that he actually is.
No,
but
are you a gambler?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah. Do you like to gamble? Like, do you like to go to...
that was a very...
I have a very addictive personality, so I cannot gamble.
Really?
That's why I deleted all the gacha games off my phone several years ago.
The truth comes out.
I mean, to be fair, my phone also went into a toilet and was destroyed, so it was kind of a hassle to get them back, but it also saved me thousands of dollars, so...
Holy shit.
Yes, I don't gamble because I don't know how to stop, because once I start winning, I keep playing, and that's the gimmick. That's how they get you.
1-800, you need 1-800-GAMBLER, dude.
That's why I just don't gamble.
Yeah.
I just don't fuck with it.
I don't gamble because I don't care.
Yeah.
That's something that I never really gave a shit about. But that's interesting. I didn't know that about you.
I enjoy it, but it is not something like I don't go to AC. I mean, we're close to Atlantic City.
We also used to live close.
And even closer.
That was like a thing to do where we lived. That's what you did on the weekend. For
a lot of my family goes. Yeah. I know people that go, but no, I'm good. I used to do the horse track occasionally, mostly as a family
thing. Horse track is fun, and that's fun to go and spend a couple bucks on a horse. Because like, if you put down $5 and you make $10, then you go buy another drink, kind of thing.
Sure,
and that's kind of fun.
But no, I am not one of these people that's going to go to Vegas or Atlantic City or wherever. There's even the place in PA. I forget what the fuck it's called, Parks or something like that.
Yeah, the Parks Casino or something. Like that.
I'm good.
Yeah,
I get why there's fun to that. I just kind of like, oh, they have the Three Stooges machine. I'll waste $10 on the penny machine, the penny slots.
Are you gonna lose your $23,000 check?
No. If I got the $23,000 check, I'd fucking leave personally. That's the extreme end of it. But no, I don't like the gamble because it's just I don't know when to stop, and I just don't like it that much.
Sure. So Scott, is enamored by everything in this.
He loves it a lot.
He loves it. He is like he thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
It also, speaking of budgets, I feel like they spent, even though I don't think these extras were paid very much, maybe a sandwich or some bag of chips, but like I feel like they wasted a lot of budget on these casino floor shots, where it's just like 50 or 60 people crammed into this room, like, make it look like a casino. It mostly works.
It's like the Punisher casino, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Frank Castle's gonna come in and start just lighting up the joint.
But I'm just thinking about how many days they shot that scene, because there's like 4 or 5 scenes in that location. Yeah. They fucking booked it through that schedule. Like Brian Trenter Smith's like, we gotta get this done in 2 days because we have like 60 fucking extras in this shot. It's costing us an arm and a leg.
I think they shot this movie in like 14 days or something.
There you go.
Which is pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
So he's there and he wants to gamble and shit. And he pulls his check out. It's a $23,000 check that he has from his dad for school tuition and housing. He cashes the whole motherfucker, and not just like, let me cash this check, give me the rest cash, I'll put it in a bag and I'm gonna have like a couple $100, right? He takes the full $23,000 fucking dollars in chips and goes and blows it all on this roulette table.
He goes up to the shadiest looking person in the casino.
For Caroline Williams.
Caroline Williams.
Back to the MDU,
yes,
Caroline.
Welcome. Still,
Stepfather 2.
Stepfather 2. I still think Stretch still takes the cake. Yeah. She's very funny in this, but she is a slimy motherfucker in this film, and she works for the casino boss.
Yeah.
And Mitch. They're very clearly cheating. But this guy's so naive. I mean, granted, it is under the table. Why would you, you know, what are you going to call him on it?
It's like a magnet that like pulls the ball, I guess, to a different number.
So on the relay table,
Yeah.
But the thing is, but right before that, they never do go anywhere with this, but I think this guy's supposed to be a plant, this very sharp-dressed man that wins all this money. And he's like, wow, he won all that money. I could be like that guy.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%.
And then they start scamming his ass.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole bit. Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro are there.
Don Rickles is in the corner.
He wants exactly 6 fucking blueberries in those muffins or whatever
That's De Niro, he wants the equal amount. Yeah, you know what? As I was thinking about this, we didn't really talk about, but is there an MDU back room, like the pawn shop? But now that you mentioned, there's got to be an MDU casino.
Well, this is it. The Lucky Shamrock, for sure.
Joe Bob's in there somewhere. It was a deleted scene, I think.
Oh, down the stairwell, yeah, for sure.
That's an interesting thought. We'll have to keep that in the back of our heads. We haven't done too many casino films. Obviously, the movie Casino is just a movie we've both seen, but I have to keep that in mind now. We have another location in the MDU.
I can tie up Don Rickles to a casino that's also in a horror movie.
And I'm
Tales
sure
from the Crypt.
I was going to say, there's got to be some Tales from the Crypt shit.
The ventriloquist dummy. So that sounds about right.
That is, I've seen that one. That's a weird one.
He is money. So we get introduced to Caroline Williams here, who's Loretta.
Loretta, yeah.
And we do get introduced to a couple other characters.
Fazio.
Fazio, who's the magician who is Tammy's boss.
Right.
And then Mitch, who runs the casino.
Fat Ray Liotta.
Fucking Paul Sorvino.
Yeah, kind of. We were talking about that earlier. It's one or the other. They fused.
Yeah, that dude's definitely cutting up a fucking piece of garlic with a razor blade.
He's going to be dealing with Cocaine Bear at some point, is what I'm saying.
Maybe.
Or he would have been if Lubna didn't get in his way. But yeah, we are introduced to all these kind of antagonistic characters while Scott's just blowing his money, his life savings away.
And there's two other people I want to introduce here, and then we can
sure,
get back to
Art,
the Lubden antics. Art and Tony, who are these two thug guys that Mitch owes money to? And they're like comedic relief, whatever.
Kind of, but I feel like...
There's some pretty funny conversation between them. They're like talking about like boxer shorts and jockeys and all
they're
this.
They're talking about underwear and socks. Listen, it's funny. Yeah. And I just don't know what the point of those characters are beyond that. It's like, okay, yeah, Mitch has his little side story because each character has something going on. But it's like, all right, so you have these guys here just to talk and have like underwear jokes. And then like Tony gets totally like treated like a chump by the leprechaun and just like keeps just acting like everything's normal. And I'm just like, wouldn't you be like getting the fuck out of there?
We're gonna get to that in a second.
No, but you're right. Yeah. So those are kind of our main players. But the point is, Scott keeps losing all his money and Loretta keeps egging him on to spend more, spend more.
And he's like, what? He's like, I'm broke. I don't have any more. I don't have anything.
What about that watch? You get some money for that watch. Just go across the street to the pawn shop. And that's how we kind of finally get back to Lubden. Is he's now going to pawn his grandfather's fucking watch that he had. You know, Christopher Walken brought that over here from Korea, Joe. He had it in his ass.
$23,000 gone. Gone.
Well, it seemed like he also just kept, like, betting, like, max because he didn't understand how it worked, which would totally be me.
Here's a thousand. Here's another thousand.
Yeah, you know those chips have meaning? They don't just
color,
they're just pretty
they're
colors.
Different colors for reasons.
Yeah. So, yeah, he goes over there, and that's where he finds Lubden finishing off, choking out Gupta.
Well, he comes in, and he finds Gupta dead, and he calls the cops. But this is where he finds the fucking coin.
Because Lubden never found
shilling.
It. Because it's on the table.
It's on the keyboard.
6 inches above his head.
Yeah.
Above his eye line.
You can't see it.
Where the fuck
right
is it?
So, the thing about this film is that when you get the leprechaun's shilling or his gold, whether it's one or all of them, you can make a wish, one wish.
Because it's different in every film. And the second one is if you held it, you couldn't be hurt.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool thing. But like, since the fucking writer didn't watch two, you know what I mean?
He had to come up with something new.
He just threw it in there. He never saw it, so he didn't know. And that's the other thing, because I'm like, wait a second, why are these people getting hurt if they hold the coin? And I'm like, oh yeah, because it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, so then like Lubden's about to like go after this guy, and like I forget what prompts this, but
he says, I wish I was back at the casino on a winning streak, and he disappears, and Lubden was gonna like axe him in the back.
Oh yeah,
and he's got my shilling.
He uses an axe a lot in this film. You're right. And then he doesn't even realize Lubden was there. And now he's back, and he's like, huh. Maybe. And he takes one of these coins and he like puts it on the fucking like poker chip.
And it's just moving by itself. Yeah,
moving around. And Loretta's like, oh, whoa. She doesn't like say no, stop the bet. She just watches it happen.
Does anybody see this happening?
And then he's got like a whole crowd around him. He's won like $100,000. And now Mitch is like over there like, hey, how'd you let it get this fucking bad? She's like, I've been hitting the button the whole time. And they keep like showing it under
the magnet falls off.
The magnet falls off. And fucking Scott's like, yeah, I'm on a winning streak. Like being real obvious about it. Again, no one knows this guy has magic, so they can't think beyond that. But Mitch is just like, yeah, we're in trouble. You need to get that money back, Loretta. And by the way, we're closing this for maintenance for a little bit. And the whole crowd's like, ah, oh, come on.
He was on a roll. Hey, kid, you staying at the hotel? That's a lot of money you got there. Here's a fucking hotel, kid. It's on me.
Talk
kiddo.
About Casino. That they literally show that in Casino where there's like the Asian guy wins all the money at the thing, but they're like, oh, he's gonna steal the towel, so they make him stay a couple more days to lose all the money. It's a classic Casino
trick. It's a classic
thing,
yeah. They give you all the amenities, and then he's like, yeah, why don't you go take a shower or something, relax, come back. And try your luck again. See what happens.
I mean, they're also like incredibly shady. Like somehow the thugs or mobsters rather running the casino in the movie Casino, which was based on real life. I mean,
well,
it's Hollywooded up,
it's
but
possible.
It's like they were more professional than the people in Leprechaun 3.
No,
because these guys are just basically like
blatant scumbags, who are running a fucking scam.
Yeah, more or less saying, yeah, take a shower and don't worry about the guy in your room taking all your money.
Oh yeah,
you know, like Tim Curry from Home Alone 2 or some shit. You know, it's like basically that. Like, yeah, take a shower. Don't worry about it. Put headphones on.
You nosy little pervert. I'm gonna smack you silly.
Yeah, put cotton balls in your ears. It's good for your health. And
So Tammy comes out and sees him with all of his fucking money. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, look, I won. Isn't this great? She's like, shut the fuck up. She's like, cash your chips out. Get the fuck out of here. Get back in your stupid car. Get out of here. And he's like, no, what are you, crazy? I'm staying upstairs. And she's like, fine, cash your shit out. Bring it upstairs. Don't let anybody in the room. Make sure the money stays right next to you because she knows that somebody's going to come up to that room and fucking steal it from
her. And like, again, like every character so far has been painted in a negative light. Even Fazio.
Yeah.
You know, she's complaining about him. You're
all shysters, yeah.
Well, yeah, but like you expect someone to complain about their boss, you know, but you know, when you actually meet this guy, he's really annoying. He's like, you know, Loretta's like, I could do the job. I could be the assistant instead. He's like, yeah, but she fills the suit out better. Like, that's the only reason why we hired her. Like, just being real like sexist about it.
So then we get all the great shots of Warwick running around Las Vegas. I'm almost positive that they're just like, all right, get Warwick in the leprechaun makeup. We got one day in fucking Vegas. We're going to shoot everything we can without getting caught.
Yeah, the strip.
It's all guerrilla filmmaking of you know what I mean?
And speaking of Baby's Day Out vision, these people actually have Baby's Day Out vision. Nobody reacts to fucking leprechaun running around, Warwick running around. I don't think those are extras. I think like Joe just said, those are just randos that just happen to be in the shot. How do you not react to a camera crew when Warwick Davis walking around? He goes to the titty bar and he's like, maybe later.
They're such quick shots.
Yeah, him and Beetlejuice would get along.
Golden Nugget, I want one of those. Like, it's just Warwick just ad-libbing as they get shots of him around Vegas.
Yeah, the Golden Nugget, I forgot about that. But yeah, he finally makes his way to the Lucky Shamrock. And like, I don't even think he realizes it's that at first, like the place that he needs to go. But then he smells the gold.
Well, he's like, it's the luck of the Irish brought me here to the Shamrock place.
Yeah, that guy from Halloween Resurrection that I can never remember his name, Luck of the Irish, as we love to refer to him as. Another St. Paddy's Day film, the Disney Channel original we covered.
Oh, yeah. Go back and check that out. That's a classic.
Talking about leprechauns eating fucking potatoes.
The Potato Chip Factory.
Yeah.
Henry Gibson
himself, for fuck's sake.
Potato Chip Factory.
He's a leprechaun. This leprechaun doesn't shrink down like in that film, though.
No. He's not giving anybody a hando in their pocket, no.
That we're aware of. No green spunk.
Well, no, he takes the starfish and he shoves it down his drawers there. That's what he does.
Right, when he starts going full leprechaun, it gets confused. Instead of going to Lubby, it runs to him and he's like, well, what the fuck? And it just starts sucking. He's like,
I'm not going to say no.
No, he just starts blowing his load right in it.
So he gets to the
How they got the grimace shake.
Oh,
it got confused. It went to Uncle O'Shamus. It got confused.
Oh, no.
It wasn't Scott. It was O'Shamus. He happened to be in the area one day. He was visiting Grimace and something got mixed up.
In that trailer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's still a Grimace person. He's green, but he's a Grimace person, so he's got purple cum.
He's got purple cum.
That's why they got to lay at Lubden.
Yeah, exactly.
That was we just figured it out. That was the big scam all along McDonald's was running. It wasn't, you know, Uncle O'Shamus or whatever the fuck Grimace's uncle's called. He was actually not the one that was creating the Shamrock Shakes, that the secret's out. It was Lubden the whole time. Because he could only produce purple shakes, and you know, McDonald's didn't want to talk about it for like 50 years, but then recently they had that birthday thing.
Grimace, oh, gotcha.
Grimace ain't going to cum in his own cup.
I think he did, though.
It was for his birthday. Why is he going to drink his own cum? That's his uncle's cum. That ain't Grimace's cum. What, you going to drink your own cum? I don't think Grimace is drinking his own cup.
But he'll drink his uncle's cup.
It's Uncle O'Shamus. It's like a shamrock shake, but it's purple. I don't know.
He's doing the perp drink.
He eats a lot of raspberries.
Oh, my God.
Razzleberry gravy.
Just totally lost the plot on that one.
A second. So Leprechaun rolls up to the front of the Lucky Shamrock. And Elvis impersonator pulls up in a fucking car.
Oh, that in a limo, and yeah. Love didn't even like scratches his nail up the side. But they're fucking doing a dance off.
He's like, "Oh, I love your clothes," or whatever the fuck he says. And
Elvis says, "I love your boots, man.
You come in blue suede, man." Thank you very much.
He's they hit it off.
That's pretty good, man. Next time you do it, you get paid for it. And then they fucking do, like, the Elvis thing.
Yeah. Warwick's like, or rather, I should say, Lubden is like, you know, I was going to kill him on a toilet, but he's all right. I'll let him live. I'll let him live tonight.
Because he knows what's going to happen to him.
Yeah. Well, he smells that gold, and he gets distracted before he can take Elvis out.
He gets into this fucking casino, and he, like, runs into Fazio at first, because Fazio's doing, like this shitty magic with, like, a bunny rabbit, like a stuffed bunny rabbit and stuff.
The casinos don't let me have real animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, inside the casino, like, in between shows kind of thing.
And he goes to do a trick for the leprechaun, and he, like, puts a sheet up over his hand, and, like, Lubden puts, like, literal shit in his hand, green shit.
This is what I'm talking about. This is what I've been talking about for years.
Yeah.
He's coming green
That's
shit.
That's what I'm saying.
He's got green shit, like, literal green shit, because he's got smelling
green,
it.
He's got green blood, green shit, green cum. It's all the same.
All green liquids coming out of Lubden.
Yeah.
You
never know what you're going to get. But, you know, now he's shooting craps on the fucking table. And, like, this is hilarious to me because it's just this leprechaun in the middle of this casino. And nobody, like, bats an eye because everybody's fucking weirdo.
I guess.
You know what we didn't mention? The father from Night of the Demons 2.
Oh, Father Bob.
Father Bob is in this casino.
With some of the characters, Shirley and a few others.
With Shirley, the boob squeeze chick. From Night of the Demons 2, yeah.
Mouse's sister or what, or something.
Friend,
yeah.
Yeah. But, like, we always talk about the MDU, and, like, this is literal MDU shit.
Brian Trenchard Smith had his own.
The Brian Trenchard Smith universe. The BTS universe.
So this clearly took place before Night of the Demons 2. I don't know what the release order actually is.
It was that St. Patrick's Day.
Before. This right before?
Yeah.
And then
and that happens in October.
It all went to shit 9 months later.
A couple months later.
Mouse. I don't know why that's the only character name, because it's Mouse.
Because it's Mouse, and it's just
somehow survives whatever. That night. Snake Angela.
I don't know no snakes. So yeah, he's shooting craps, and Tony and Anton come over to him, and they're like, "We're taking over this table, little fuck you." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" He fucking takes a coin and sticks it in Tony's mouth and pulls his arm and turns him into a human slot machine.
He even says something like, "Oh, you're like a slot machine." And then he's like, coins just keep coming out of this guy's mouth. Again, just kind of goes back to what he's doing, like, huh, that was weird.
How long do you think those coins keep coming out of his mouth? Like, how long does that magic last?
Just about as long as those slugs kept coming out of Ron Weasley's mouth. So
yeah,
a while.
So. Yeah, and he had to go into the wizard's hospital.
Yeah. They stopped eventually.
Yeah, but if this little thing shoved a coin in your mouth and you started spitting out other coins, I wouldn't fuck with him again. You know what I mean?
Again, I'd be going to the ER. I'd be calling. I mean, this guy's not going to call the cops because he's clearly some kind of like illegally hired muscle who's threatening Mitch that he's going to murder him. But, you know, maybe don't hang out. So I know they're waiting for Mitch. They're trying to collect their what's due to them.
Yeah.
But maybe just wait outside. I don't know.
So Loretta and Fazio have a plan to rob Scott in his room. And Fazio goes up there. Loretta wants the coin, and they're going to split all his money, the $100,000. So Fazio goes up there to rob him, and he ends up not finding the money, but he steals his coin.
Right, because the money's, like, in the bathroom with him.
Yeah,
but.
And Scott comes out, and fucking Fazio, like, throws a shirt at him and, like, punches him in the stomach.
A shirt that is Scott's that he was going to steal
silk.
At first? Oh, this is really nice.
He's like, "Silk, keep that."
But you're right, yeah, he steals the coin and he gets the hell out of there.
And not even a second later, the leprechaun comes rolling in with fucking room service and this green smoke.
He rides this thing like Slimer in a few scenes. But yeah, he comes in. He's always like a second too late. Again, he could smell this fucking thing, but I guess it takes him a minute to pick up the scent again. He always has like the old scent.
That's how we're up in the body count,
sure.
Right? You know?
Except for Scott, because then he's like getting attacked by Lubden and he's like biting him in the fucking arm.
Dude, he jumps on him and like sinks his teeth into his arm. And Scott takes a fucking steak knife and shoves it right into the middle of his forehead. This is cool. Now, this is
right from the room service.
This is
right.
Something from this movie that I really like and this whole concept, because he bites him and then his blood gets into the wound.
Mm-hmm.
And this kicks off the whole were-leprechaun shit. But before,
even though it's more like a vampire, but sure.
Well, yeah, kind of.
Not, I mean, we're talking about a leprechaun werewolf. I mean, let's not overthink
this. Yeah, same difference. Kind. They're all magical creatures, right?
Yeah, I guess he doesn't drink the blood. It just lands in the wound.
It just spills in it, right? Bonds with his DNA. But this is my favorite scene of the whole fucking movie, dude, because after he stabs Lubden in the head, he throws him out the fucking window. Yeah. And this screen, I used to rewind this tape as a kid. When he throws Leprechaun out the window, Warwick scream on the way down, and when he just smacks that fucking pavement, dude, it gets a laugh out of me every time.
Yeah, that was one of the cheaper effects. They mostly blended
I thought it was great.
They mostly blended okay, but
there was
just
a total dummy coming out of there.
I don't know. It looks like a Photoshop image just launching.
No, it's and then a hitting dummy the ground. Getting thrown out of that window.
I got to give that a second viewing. Didn't look great, but maybe it's just me.
Oh, it's so good.
Hits the ground like a sack of potatoes, of course, because he's Irish. And then this just like puts him out of commission just long enough for Scott to get the fuck out of Dodge as Lubden's pulling the snake knife out of his head.
He like breaks it off and he's like, next, you know, then you get the shit that like, next time I'll take the elevator.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
All right. What kind of movie are we making still? Are we making that like kiddie comedy, or are we making the rated R version?
Well, then, of course, he looks back at the camera and goes, he's got my shilling. Because that's like he keeps like never getting the damn shilling back. But he smells it again. Again, there's so many scenes of him smelling it. It might not be every time, but he's like, ah, my shilling.
Well, Fazio gives Loretta the coin.
She rips it out of his hand. But
yeah, she, you know, they get it back because he wants to sell it because they didn't get the money.
He doesn't understand the whole thing. Yeah.
Mitch comes up and he's like, did you get my fucking money back yet? She's like, no, not yet. He takes the coin from her and he's like, I'm going to hold on to this until you get me my money back from that kid. And by happenstance, they're talking about each other being disgusting fucking slobs that they are. And he's like, I could get any woman that I want, you fat bitch. And she's like, yeah, like that Tammy girl.
Right, because he's like kind of trying to hit on her earlier when she clearly wants nothing to do with it.
He's trying to fuck her the whole time. Yeah, it's gross. And he's just like, well, I wish. And then, whoop, all of a sudden Tammy's like, oh, Mitchy Poo, I'm going to suck your dick right on the ground here.
Well,
and
yeah.
And take me on the floor, Mitch.
She does say that, and she's like all over him. And then he's like, ooh, doesn't think anything's weird, just thinks, all right, I'm a lucky guy, and then like goes in the elevator with her.
Takes her up to his room.
Yeah.
But there's like a twist on it, though, because it's like, so let me ask you a question.
Sure.
He wishes that Tammy wants him, right? Like wants to fuck him, right?
Yeah.
Is this her actual kinks coming out? Like the like slapping him and the rough stuff shit? You think that like she's actually like that?
Yeah, I think
In the old bedroom there in the sheets?
I think it's getting ramped up to like
Magician's assistant in the streets and freak in the sheets? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's ratcheted up a little because Lubden's a spicy motherfucker. He likes to really take things to the extreme. But I wouldn't be surprised if she likes a little horseplay in the bed.
Horseplay?
I mean, she also likes to be a fucking tease. I mean, there's a reason for that that ends up working for the character, but it takes her a long time to strip out of these clothes.
Well,
it's already very sexual to begin with.
This chick is not bearing her breasts for this movie, and it stops right before that happens.
Good for her, honestly. Hey,
no,
not
sure,
that there's anything
great
wrong with that.
No,
but
I mean, but they're like, ah, shit, she's not showing her tits. We gotta have tits in this movie, baby.
Yeah. But there's like, this whole scene where she's doing these striptease, dancing for this guy on the bed, and he's getting hard as a fucking rock. He's got some serious mahogany. He's got a full fucking redwood going.
What does he call it? He fucking says, oh, you want my heat-seeking moisture missile.
Oh,
I don't know if
God.
He says that to Tammy. Oh, he says it to the TV chick.
Right, which we're going to get to in
second. Yeah, yeah.
But Loretta sneaks in again, like Tim Curry. A little better at it than Tim Curry was, or in Fazio for that matter. But she grabs the...
Well, Mitch was getting fucked, so...
Well, she hears him in the background, oh, yeah, take it off. And Tammy being all sexual, loud and stuff as she's taking this bra off. One, you know, it takes her like an hour to take it off. But Loretta steals the coin. And as she leaves the room, as Tammy, like you said, is about to pull those off and show a nipple, she's like,
You know, no Snoopies, dude.
What the fuck? What's going on? And then, like, you know, just barely avoided being raped.
Which is pretty awful because she's like, how did I get here? What'd you do to me? And, like, that whole thing is kind of gross.
I mean, it is gross. They make it kind of funny, but they also then have that scene a little bit later after Mitch is dispatched, where she's kind of breaking down, like, oh, this wasn't the first time this happened. And it's pretty dark, actually, On some level, I'll kind of criticize these things, but it works so well in this scene, and I feel like it is kind of shining a light on that without being overly beating you over the head with the idea. Just in this movie that has so much levity, to have that kind of like Gremlins, not as extreme as Gremlins,
no,
obviously.
But I know what you mean, yeah.
But it's like, wow, a little bit of a shot of reality, I guess.
But she knees him right in the fucking balls.
Knees him in the balls, gets the fuck out.
And he fires her.
Over
that's what she's more upset about. And it's like, go get a job.
Right.
There's a casino next door.
Well, that's the dark comedy element of like, yeah, she was almost sexually assaulted, but the real problem is she lost her job. That's the joke, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Kinda, but anyway, so Mitch gets his comeuppance where this fucking Terror Vision ass scene happens, where this fucking woman, or almost like Freddy Krueger, actually.
Yeah, Leprechaun, like, puts magic into the TV.
Which then I feel like he does again in 4 or 5, but this is definitely the first time he does it that I can remember.
I can't remember if he does the TV thing again.
He definitely does in 4, but it's not like a woman taking her top off. It's like the guy scene towards the end.
No. I know what you're talking about. He does a glamour of one of the actors.
Maybe that's what it is.
And but he's morphed into people before.
Sure.
This is like he's like doing like TV programs.
Yeah, like Terror Vision, or like actually more like Videodrome, or even Poltergeist to some extent, where this fucking chick comes right out of the TV.
She's like, hey, Mitch, want to see my tits?
Is this real? Is this a dream?
I guess it's real. And she comes out of the fucking television and she's like riding him on the bed.
This is an hologram.
This is some of my
Let
favorite.
Let me see those titties.
This is some of my favorite bits, too, because on the TV, as this chick is, like,
in
riding this guy, Warwick Davis is on TV as a leprechaun in all these different roles. Like, he's a lawyer in one thing, he's, like, a TV evangelist in another, and he's, like, a psychic in another one.
Yeah.
Very funny shit. It was so fun to see that because, again, we talked about it before, but it was, like, letting Warwick really embrace the comedy aspect of it and kind of do something really fun.
Yeah,
I love that. And those are some good scenes.
And I always appreciate costume changes on, like, creatures. I guess he's kind of like a creature, just like
he's
on monsters.
A creature. He's the monster.
Because a lot of times I feel like in these films, at least the ones that we've covered, and maybe some that I've just seen, where it's like they have their one version, their mold or whatever. They don't go beyond that. I mean, they might have multiple types for different, you know, one might have to take a beating, one might not. But it's like kind of cool when you see the different costume changes where, like you just said, he's like a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. And then later he's got this little cape he has on when he does his magic trick.
So this thing turns into a fucking robot. And it's creepy as hell. And it's like all hooked up to the TV. And it's pretty cool effect. And he electrocutes Mitch to death, like in the bed. And then Tammy and Scott run in because they're going to like confront Mitch or whatever about what he did to her.
Sure. They should.
And they show up and he is fried to a fucking crisp.
He's supposed to be. I kind of want him to look a little more like that guy after Joker gives him the hand buzzer. He just kind of has some soot on his face and is clearly dead, but I guess that's what they're trying to convey, sure.
Yeah. But Leprechaun, like, comes out from behind the bed.
Oh, spooked you!
He's hiding back there.
I smell my coin, blah, 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 blah. Right. And then Art and Tony rush in from, like, the other door and then just get annihilated. Again, why Tony even is just... doesn't have a gun or a weapon after he just got turned into a slot machine. I don't know. The guy's clearly missing a few brain cells.
There's two gags that I really like here.
Sure.
And one is Tammy throws something at Lep and they run out. And he's like, he like falls back on the bed and he's like laying down when Art and Tony walk in. And Art walks in and he's like, what the fuck is going on in here? Because like he's like fried on the bed. Mitch is fried on the bed. And
like,
there's just like a little
fucked
person.
His brains out. Yeah.
So he stabs Tony's eye out with his shillelagh. And then he's going to beat the shit out of Art. And right before Art dies, he looks up at him and he goes, tell me something. How was Judy Garland in real life? And I'm like, that was a fucking ace Mickey Rooney joke right there, dude.
Well, I was thinking the same thing, but it's just because he's a fucking little person. Because
he's a little person, but he looks like him too.
He does a little bit. It might be a double whammy. You're probably right. Definitely Mickey Rooney from fucking Silent Night, Deadly Night 5.
Ah, Joe Petto.
That era for sure, when he was really looking like a goblin.
It's just like that was pretty funny. It didn't need to be there, but like I appreciate it.
I mean, I like meta humor. You usually don't. The fact that you appreciated that just speaks volumes for the joke, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think it's fucking hilarious.
I think it
myself lands
really well. Well, we'll get to the final thought. So Caroline Williams has the coin, and her whole thing was like, I want to be sexy again with my tits up here and my ass here because I'm saving up my money because I'm going to get plastic surgery and that's going to fix me something.
I want to be beautiful again.
Yeah.
And then she makes the wish, and she's looking pretty damn good.
I mean, she just looks like that. She's wearing all that frump shit.
Oh, on purpose.
When she's regular.
It's a smart wardrobe choices.
And she's all padded out and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like how they did that.
That's the goof.
The hair, not so much, but that was the style at the time.
Sure.
That was very in.
Yeah.
I think Edward Scissorhands instantly, where it's like they kept getting those haircuts. They kind of fit in with the time. I feel like even the mom eventually gets a very short haircut like that. Very stylish for the 90s.
It's very akin to the one from Dreamgirl from Tales from the Dark Side.
You're right. Anyway, the point is she's sexified.
Yeah, she's hot. She's walking around as hot Caroline Williams now.
And everyone's looking at her ass and her
she's
tits.
Jiggling her fucking breasts
around.
Oh,
she keeps doing that in the mirror.
She's Snoopy swinging, yeah.
Yeah. And while she's oogling her bazingas.
she wants to, like, fuck herself.
Yeah, she says, I wish I could turn into a man so I could fuck myself into the ground, screw myself into the ground. But then as she's looking at herself in the mirror, Lubden comes in.
Well, Fonzio takes the coin from her.
Right. Which ruins her luck, of just kind of the theme throughout.
Yeah, it's not the same as the Mitch thing, though, because she should have turned back, right?
Well, I think that was just specifically because Tammy was being influenced. I mean, let's not overthink it, but I think that was all there was to that.
Sure.
You're not wrong. That is kind of a plot hole, but Lubden takes care of it. He makes sure that she changes back to normal.
He get a bunch of good limericks from Warwick here.
Rapid fire about
asses, lips,
brasses, brass balls and stuff.
Well, brass balls was the other thing. He's talking about something else here. He's like, I'll make your lips as fat as your ass and all this shit.
Yeah.
And her fucking tits are gigantic and her ass is huge. Her lips are fucking, they look all disgusting and distorted. She looks like a real housewife of, the mob wives or something.
Oh, she got a bad BBL. That's what it is. Because she can't even get fit through the fucking door because her hips are so wide.
When she moves, there's like the sound of liquid sloshing around. It's fucking gross, dude.
Yeah, like too much fake shit inside her. Again, it doesn't really matter because Lubden just, he's magic points at her and her whole fucking body explodes.
He's
got an umbrella, though.
Speaking
thankfully of
Tremors, yeah, he's got an umbrella. She explodes in like glorious Gay Bartolo's Frankenhooker style.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, she's fucking dead.
No kidding.
Grease spot.
Literally.
So here's this fucking scene here. And it's only here so that Scott and Tammy can go to the pawn shop to get the medallion to bring it back to the fucking casino. Because that's a big thing that they need to use for the end of the movie.
I mean, it does also start to flesh out now that Scott has been bitten and this blood has fallen into the bite mark. That he is slowly transforming. I mean, he does have this quick scene where he sees himself fully transformed. In the mirror, very, very Teen Wolf-esque, and then now he's kind of going in stages where now he kind of has freckles and more hair.
He's eating potatoes, he's doing limericks, he's doing all kinds of shit.
He orders every potato item on this menu at this Irish pub, and he's like hitting on this Irish waitress, and he's talking Irish. That is kind of similar to Luck of the Irish, where now he's turning into an Irish person.
Yes.
Person. and that kind of is the theme. And he just, every time he starts talking, with the Irish accent, again, the music starts kicking up.
And he's talking about, he does a limerick about penis au gratin or something like that, which is pretty funny.
But now they head to the pawn shop and they find the medallion. And he's almost entirely transformed at this point, because, like, even the sight of the medallion makes him upset. He's like, God, put that away! Get it away from me!
He's becoming a full-blown leprechaun because he smells the gold and he wants Lubden's gold.
He finds the safe,
He finds the stash where Lubden put it before,
Snaps his fucking fingers and it just opens.
He's using magic now. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess you're a fucking giant leprechaun, man.
Very nonchalantly.
Yeah, but this is the first time because you hear it on the computer and it's like, one leprechaun can't stand another leprechaun because they're very territorial or whatever. And then Lubden comes in, he's like, you motherfucker.
Well, it's also, again, this Flash encyclopedia, let's call it, is it, always giving the right information at the right time. Someone just happens to bump into the space bar, and they're like, yeah, by the way, you can't destroy a leprechaun, but if you destroy his gold, that'll destroy him. Put that in your cap.
Yeah.
And Tammy's like, we gotta destroy the gold, and Scott's like, well, yeah, we'll destroy it, but I want it! It's like a golem kind of thing.
Also, like, well, we'll get to it. Fucking destroying the gold. That's what you got?
I mean, what was it in 2? I'm trying to remember now.
2 was wrought iron.
And 1, obviously, they shot the four-leaf clover into the mouth.
Yeah, fuck you, Lucky Charms, yep.
And 4, they shot him out of fucking airlock.
They just, it was literally alien. And then he exploded.
And 5, he doesn't die.
No, he smokes weed and fucks bitches and sings.
I want to be hanging out with that, well, maybe not hanging out, he'd probably kill me, but I'll be him.
He'll fuck you to death.
Oh, God, he fucks him to death. Never mind. I take that. I don't want to be him. Christ, I'll take the magic, though.
So you can't use the leprechaun's gold against him because they tried to, like, make a wish against him. And then,
I wish you were dead or something, yeah.
And he's encased in cement at the bottom of the ocean. He's like, oh, you can't do it, lad, blah, blah, blah. He's like, now for that trick, I'll chop off your dick. And he goes after him with a fucking axe.
Right.
And I guess Tammy was, like, a softball champion or something, and she, like, throws something at Lubden and knocks him out, and they run away.
Right.
But the problem is Scott is, like, being debilitated by, like, turning into a leprechaun,
yeah.
The transformation. So she takes him to a hospital. Now, this is where this fucking movie completely deviates, and I'm like, this is a...
It's literally a detour.
It gets weird, right?
I mean, it's already pretty weird in the scheme of things, but it definitely, I mean, I just said it, but there's this detour to the hospital. It just
feels
like...
We're there for a while, though.
It just is like kind of like padding. Like I like a couple of these scenes, but it mostly just feels like there just to make the movie reach its runtime.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Because Lubden doesn't have a car in this one, unfortunately. He doesn't get in the go-kart or his leprechaun mobile like he does in the last 2 films. He just magically teleports there and is in like a scrubs in a fucking surgeon's outfit.
He's trying to get a ride. He's hitchhiking.
Oh, wow.
There's like a scene of that.
I've completely forgot about that, actually.
But yeah, he's there in his scrubs and stuff. And I was going to say, isn't there a fucking one of these movies where he's in a doctor's outfit? And there is, but it's only a brief thing. It's not like he kills him, like he comes in and pulls the thing and is like, oh, tis a pity, I forgot me Novocaine or whatever the fuck, you know?
Because like now they're going to like operate on Scott or something because he's bleeding out of the mouth, green blood's coming out of his mouth.
It's the thing of like, here's these shitty doctors and they're like, does he have insurance? Does he?
Yeah, this could be the difference between life and death. Do you have insurance? And he goes, do you take Green Cross?
Do you take Green Cross? And it's just like they find his money next to him and they're like, we're going to run tests for the next 3 days. And
give him every test we can think of. Yeah. He's rich.
And like, that's kind of funny, I guess, but it's just really weird.
I think it's funny if Lubden then comes in and kills them. But
yeah,
no,
not what happens.
It's not what happens at all. This guy now knows how to use magic. So telepathically, he takes this like fucking buzzsaw, cuts himself loose and just sedates everybody.
I don't know. He like kisses that woman and she passes out. And then
it sucks the air out of her. Again, Freddy Krueger, anybody. Part 5.
Want to suck face? Yeah.
A 4, I mean. That's one of those. They both suck. Doesn't matter.
It's 4. But we take a detour to fucking John Kramer's morgue, and I guess Lubden's there and like calls Tammy over the loudspeaker or something.
Right.
And she goes down there.
Because she's waiting for Scott, yeah.
Yeah, but she like he locks her up on a table.
He like points at her and she falls over.
And he's gonna cut her nose off or something. And Scott's like, don't you cut her nose off, I'll rip off your toes or some shit. Now it's like a leprechaun fucking showdown.
It's a limerick off.
It's a
They're going at it. They're firing them off, and Tammy gets broken out by Scott, who again now also has magic and easily just do the same thing Lubden did. Points and all the fucking buckles come off her, and they're just kind of going at it with these Irish one-liners.
He's got his full use of his magic now. And what the hell does he do to him? Oh no! Oh yeah, Tammy like hits him with the medallion. That's what it is, and he like rides away on a gurney, like giving him the finger.
Yeah, they shove it in Lubden's mouth momentarily.
Again?
You would think that would blow him up or something, but it does
twice.
Nothing. Oh, yeah.
Because he gets it in the mouth in the beginning, too, with that fucking green Alka-Seltzer. So he's like, fuck you, get away from us. If Fazio has your coin, go get him.
He doesn't get a go-kart in this movie. He gets a gurney full of fucking food from the hotel.
Do you know they only did the go-kart in the second movie because he was in like a little car in the first one? That was the only reason.
I mean, I kind of would have jumped to that conclusion myself, but...
I mean, it feels a little bit more natural in 2, I guess, for it to be there, but it's not like a cartoony thing.
Listen, I'm not necessarily suggesting that. I know I'm like, I've probably made fun of that concept before that they just obviously give him a go-kart. I just think about, well, if he has a vehicle for transportation, it should be the fucking go-kart, not just him with the thumb on the side of the road or teleporting.
I think it's kind
of
funny, though, that he can't just teleport. Even though, because, well, it doesn't matter in this one. I was going to say, well, he needs his gold and then he has his magic, but that's not even a fucking thing in this.
Maybe if he used the gold as a proxy, he's got to teleport to the gold piece. But no, we don't ever go there with it.
We go to Fazio's show and he's about to light somebody on fire from the audience in his burning beauty routine because he wished.
He teased that earlier.
Because he wished to be the greatest magician in the world. That's his wish.
Yeah, because earlier in the film, they show the whole thing, how he's just this washed-up magician, and it's a bunch of old-timers just going there for lunch, just bored out of their mind while he does the show.
People, like, passed out on the table.
Yeah, and they have these fuck-ups constantly, and he tries to blame the assistant, but now he's got his magic robe. He looks like Doctor Strange out there or some shit.
Full house, dude. Bring back the fucking chick with the tits instead of this guy.
She does fill out that costume. But yeah, he's got the person from the audience, and I don't even know if we even actually see the end result of this, because Lupton pops out of a box and just snaps his fingers and the whole set changes.
And he's in a costume and they're matching.
He's got the cape and he's got a little hat on. Different hat.
Why does he give Fazio an ultimatum? Everybody else, he's beaten to death, going straight for the jugular on all these people, but instead he's like, oh, Fazio, give me back my coin and I'll not hurt you, or I won't harm you, or whatever.
Let's go back to what you've said a couple times already. The guy who wrote this didn't see the other movie, so I'm going to say maybe they didn't totally have all their eyes in a row or teeth. There's an expression there somewhere I'm fucking up.
We didn't need to take the detour to the hospital, man. We just did not need that.
All his T's crossed and I's dotted. I don't know. We didn't need all this. And again, the corrupt doctors that are instantly taken out, not killed, but they're corrupt anyway, just because.
Or whatever. So Lupton puts Fazio in a fucking box, like saw the lady in half trick.
Yeah.
And he fucking cuts Fazio in half with a chainsaw.
I think they could have played this up for some more comedy, but I guess they're just trying to wrap the film up at this point.
I think it's pretty good. Like, that gag is good. And when Warwick like splits him in half and he's like, and he like puts his arms up, like, look what I did. Like, that's very funny.
I kind of was hoping for the crowd to start clapping, just not getting it. But no, they get it instantly when they see the guts falling out. I don't know. I was wishing for a little bit more dark humor there, but it is a very funny scene.
I mean, that was the dark humor.
No, you're right.
Because he was really cutting him in half.
And then they
and they're like, yeah, cut him in half!
Until they see the blood all over. It's like spraying on this guy in the front's face. And then Scott, now again, full leprechaun essentially, comes in with Tammy. Ah, this is real, by the way! This is real! Get this! This guy's a murderer!
And this is really sloppy. Because it's like, he's a psycho! Get out of here!
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they thought it was fake, I feel like that line plays into it more, because now there's, oh shit, this is really happening. Instead, it's like, they already know. There's already panic. People are already getting trampled. It just feels like, well, they're there. They should probably say something.
So they leave. So everybody runs out. Now, Tammy and Scott are there.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, he's like, give me the shilling, blah, blah, blah. We've been talking about this the whole fucking thing. He's finally got his shilling back.
I got my shilling back!
He has it. He could just leave now.
Well, now he's pissed. Now he wants revenge.
Now he needs to kill Scott.
Because there can only be one Joe.
Yeah, it's like fucking Highlander.
He pulls the sword out.
There's some
fighting in a parking garage.
There's also some bullshit. He's like, come to the green side, Scott. And it's like,
kind of.
No, he says that.
I know.
Yeah. And then he's like, I'll give you all my gold and we can share it together in some kind of semi-homoerotic thing.
But everyone, including Tammy, knows he's lying. Yeah. But again, they establish how now that he's part leprechaun, he's going to be conflicted. The greed's too much to kind of overcome. But in this instance, again, because Tammy kind of snaps him out of it. He's reaching for the pot.
Yeah.
She's like, no, you can't do it.
Well, she's like, the gold, that's where his power is. The gold, you got to destroy it. And he's got like a flamethrower from the magic show. Man, you would need to throw this gold into fucking Mount Doom.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't just shoot a flamethrower at it and it melt.
I let alone that they're basically Sam and Frodo having the end argument before he walks in. I mean, I don't even know. I guess, again, is Warwick Gollum in this situation? He did bite off a toe earlier.
Yeah, but you're missing Goop to Baggins, man.
He's dead already.
Right, he already went across with the elves.
Yeah.
We're going to the other side.
Bring back Ian home. Please, he could play Gupta. He could wear the brown face.
He's going to be the leprechaun in the next movie.
No. He's too old. I would have liked to see that version of Bilbo. I mean, I know we now have had What's-His-Face for many years playing the character.
Martin Freeman.
But Ian Holm, I know unfortunately he passed away, but imagine him coming back versus fucking Warwick in the prime.
Oh, my God.
Puts that ring on. Does Lupton see him? That's my question.
I don't know. Is Lubden working for the Dark Lord? Probably.
This is the MDU, and just since we're on that thought, I know we're kind of reaching the end of the film, and we're going to have our final thoughts shortly. But you think if Lubden actually got it in some
the ring,
he probably got it.
You think it's in that pot of gold?
I think he wears it on his cock.
You think so?
I think that's, the
extra... That was a joke I made on the fucking Tony show about the one cock ring to rule them all.
Sauron should have been holding it?
Because it gets bigger and smaller, and you could put it on any size dick. There you go.
That is true. You could put it on a giant's penis. That is on the urethra.
Or a leprechaun.
The old shaft. Yeah, but I think that's where he's got it. Yeah. And that's part of the whole jack-off situation with the shamrock shapes. It gives him a little extra friction to help splooge inside the starfish.
Yeah.
It's also just, kind of hard to get at.
It squeezes the urethra for more distance for shoots.
In fact, you want to know how he got out of that guy's penis in Leprechaun 4?
Like putting your thumb over a garden hose?
Yes, but also he flicked as he got shrunk down and eaten or whatever the fuck it was in that film. I forget the semantics, but he got
gigantic.
Right, but I'm talking about in the beginning of the film.
Oh, when he pisses on him and goes in his dick.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
The thing is, when he was going up the piss stream, he flicked it. We couldn't see it because the quality's so shitty on the transfer. He flicked the ring onto the guy's penis, but he didn't realize it, and that's how he stretched his penis.
Right. It was like a portal.
It
was like Sonic. Sonic's rings, and that's how he gets to the different portals. Yeah.
Right, so the reality is that Lupton doesn't teleport.
He uses the ring.
He puts the ring on and he just walks.
He's like Sonic.
There you go, yeah. Some more Lupton lore. We somehow found it here at the end of the Leprechaun 3 review.
So he is truly John Hurt's cohort.
I mean, he probably does know how to actually teleport, so combine that with the ring, there's probably some kind of anti-gravity.
He's chaotic evil.
Time is shifting around Lupton constantly.
So this has probably got to be one of the most anticlimactic
after that setup,
right? Because they light he shoots the fire on the gold and it fades out.
It
destroys it? Question mark.
It dissolves. It Adobe Premiere default
film
transition.
Dissolves away.
Whatever.
And Lupton is on fire and he's floating around in the place.
Think of Dracula.
Yeah. And then he just slams down and he's dead. And it looks like they used the dead leprechaun body from the first movie here and lit that on fire, it still looks good. But it's just very anticlimactic to me.
It is. They needed something else. If they're going to light this thing on fire, I understand. Again, I've said it a few times already. Very small budget. But that was not the way to do that. It just feels like you're wrapping it the fuck up. Let's get this done.
The problem is, in the first movie, he has all of those cool lighting effects, and he melts and comes back, and they throw him down the well. They let him on fire. There's a big explosion. The second one, he gets stabbed with the fucking wrought iron through the chest and literally fucking explodes into a million pieces.
Yeah. He explodes a lot in this series.
Well, he explodes in 4 right in the beginning, but in 3, it's just kind of he's on fire and he's burned to death. He's dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, maybe they just spent the budget everywhere else. They didn't really think about the final kill. They're well, it's the end of the movie. I know people want to see something interesting, but we ran out of money. Oh, well.
I mean, I think that
maybe I'm giving it too much credit. I don't know.
The idea was cooler than the execution.
Sure.
So then Scott and Tammy leave, and now they're in love or something. And they just walk out into the sunset. He's going to school, and she's, I don't know what, going with him to live in his dorm room with him?
I mean, he's got all that money. She's at least
now he's got $100,000.
She's at least for the weekend going to fuck his brains out. After that, who knows? They do have a little bit of a bonding moment over this leprechaun, I would hope. I don't think it's as serious of a situation as Ragdoll, where a grandma was sacrificed. So if they break up, it's not that terrible.
No.
But, either way, Scott made out like a bandit. He's back to normal. He's no longer bleeding or coming green.
This is true, yeah.
So Tammy's very excited about that. And, we're left to never really find out what happens, because again, now Leprechaun just goes to fucking space. And then when he returns, he's in the fucking heart of New York, I guess, or something.
He's in the hood, dude.
So Scott and Tammy, their lives go on,
I guess.
And it's all left in Vegas, Joe, because we don't talk about what happens in Vegas.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, man.
Yeah.
For sure. So with that being said, where are we putting this?
Ah, this has got to be in the dumpster. I don't even dislike this film that much. I just think, it, you know, going back to the original question, is this the best Leprechaun sequel? I think 2 is still...
2 is my favorite one. And I'll tell you why in a second.
Sure. I still think I like that first one better, but 2 is very well put together. There might be some debate for that. I think that might be a little hard.
What's the best sequel?
Oh, sequel,
What's
sure.
What's the best sequel?
Sure.
Best Leprechaun sequel.
But the rest of those sequels, I've kind of already given my thoughts on that over the course of this review and in other episodes.
Yeah.
So you kind of know where I stand on that. But yeah, this is like, it's good. It's not bad at all. I wish they did a few things differently. Again, some of those weird casting choices, I just have to point out. It's not that big of a deal to everybody, but it's just, why? Why Gupta? I don't get that one.
You're so hung up on Gupta.
I mean, we got Caroline Williams and Warwick Davis and even the guy that plays Scott. The rest of the cast kind of are great.
The Pumpkinhead connection, you forgot to mention.
Oh, God, yeah, the Pumpkin. Okay, so...
Might as well just go into it
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so Scott, and then I'll finish my final... thought on that, but Scott, the guy who plays Scott, was in Pumpkinhead 2. He was the young version of Judge Dixon, who is the character who actually, along with his friends, creates Pumpkinhead in that movie by killing Tommy, throwing him down, talking about wells, throwing him down that fucking well.
The Lupton Well.
The Lupton Well, where Arachnus was thrown down. You know, the bartender's always talking about
deep, it. Deep MDU lore. If you don't know what we're talking about, you're going to have to go catch up. Check the description of this video for all the linked videos
yes.
where you can get the full scope of the lore.
I meant to mention that earlier, the whole point being that now Lupton and Pumpkinhead have been kind of on this show in this ongoing card game at the bottom of Lupton's Well. You know, there's a John Hurt portal you got to go through to get to the card table.
Sure.
But it's at the bottom of the well, and he's always playing cards. I don't know if it's Texas Hold'em or Go Fish. We never know with these guys, but he's playing with Kumdar, Corpse Fucker,
yeah.
P-Head's always there.
They're all kicking it, yeah.
They're kicking it, and, you know, the cavalry of characters pop in occasionally yeah. to play a hand or two. So yeah, of course the MDU is real, Joe.
Yes, of course. But with that we
yeah,
sorry.
With all that, I can't forget that. I'm glad you mentioned
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
The Pumpkinhead connection, the Blood Wings, the Bloodline.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the Rock and Roman Reigns storyline that's all I really know about.
Or the Bloodstone.
The Bloodstone.
Bleeders, yeah. Well,
right.
Actually, it does connect to that. Anyway.
But with all that nonsense said... I thought the cinematography in this was really good. The camera work is pretty solid for made for video film. Again, Warwick's great in this. All the acting, generally speaking, is good. And at the risk of repeating myself, I think it's solid, but it's definitely dumpster. It doesn't really... I hate to use the expression, it doesn't hold a candle to 1 and 2, because I don't think it's that drastically worse. I just think those first two films are a lot better. So I would definitely recommend this one, but just no going into it. Unless you really love Vegas... which maybe does something for some people, or this maybe was your first Leprechaun. I know, Joe, you said that, I don't know if you said it in the episode or before we started filming this, that it's a lot of people's favorite. But I wouldn't go that far personally. I could see it, but it's just kind of in the middle for me.
This is ranked as the best Leprechaun sequel. And again, like I said in the beginning, it's Warwick Davis's favorite. Now, this movie is on the shelf for me, and I put the first through the fourth one on the shelf.
I can see that.
I really don't like Leprechaun in the Hood, or Back to the Hood, or Returns, or that other WWE bullshit that doesn't even make sense.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think In the Hood is worse than this film, but I weirdly enjoy it better than this one. It's nowhere near as well made, but I don't know, I get a kick out of that film.
I'll watch this again before I watch In the Hood again. You know, 2 is my favorite. 2, I think that's the best Leprechaun sequel is 2.
Yeah, if I didn't just say that, I agree.
Because obviously it's very hard to make a good sequel to, like, any movie, and I think 2 does a really good job of that. And again, 2 is a lot, has more gore in its 2,
yeah.
And, like, there's a good balance of scary and, a comedy and horror in
the
it.
The balance is there, yeah.
That I think does it a lot better than 3. 3 is, like, a balls to the wall. All of the horror stuff is completely gone, and it's all just joke after dark joke after, sight gag or crazy gore gag or something like that, and limericks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's a lot of dark comedy, and it's mostly that. Like, there is no real horror element to the movie anymore. And we see that going through the rest of the series.
Sure.
Which is fine. And it's not that I don't like it because of that. It's just I need a little bit more out of my movies, and I'd rather watch one and two. And if I want something totally fucking wacky, I'll go right to four. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. No, I get that.
Because four is just no holds bars, pulls out all the stops, fucking insanity. And that movie's crazy. I love that one. I mean, it's really...
Crazy.
It's really yucking it up in four, which yeah. I really appreciate. Because it's the fourth sequel by then. You know, how many times yeah. can you do the leprechaun thing? But, yeah, man, it, you know what? Three is just, for me personally, it's fine. I didn't like not enjoy watching it, but it's very middling. It's not the one I reach for. It's the one I forget about the most, even though it's the big one where it's like, well, that's the Vegas one, you know?
Right, like even though you say you actually dislike some of those other films more, you forget about this one.
Yeah.
Because it's so in the middle.
Because, like I said, Leprechaun 1, I think, is truly like the perfect movie of this series. Leprechaun 2 is my favorite because it still retains the horror stuff. There's a really good story in that one with like his bride and all that stuff. And like, I just like the way it's shot and filmed. Check out that Leprechaun 2 commentary track and I'll tell you all about it. It just feels right, the second one. The third one, it goes full out tongue in cheek, and I don't know, it's okay. It's just fine. And if I really want the fucking nutty aspect, or I need another sequel to watch, I'm going right to four.
Yeah, and I just want to add an addendum to that, because like I did mention the cinematography is very good in this, but I will say that, and this is again not just I said this like 10 times already, but the budget, there are definitely some shots where you could tell like maybe they used a different camera, or they didn't have the A crew on the set that day, or maybe not even the B crew. Again, if they made this movie in a week or two, who am I to really judge? But 95% of it looks pretty solid. But every once in a while, you get one of those shots. You're like, all right, yeah, this was made for video.
Yeah,
but it's not a huge knock. But I guess just to clarify what I said earlier.
Yeah, but in the same breath, I think it looks great for the budget that it's at.
100%. Yeah, I guess that's also what I'm saying.
I'm not
yeah.
knocking it in that department. I think the special effects are great. Warwick's great, of course. Warwick and Gabe are the constants throughout this whole series that I think keeps it on its feet. As soon as you take Warwick out of the equation, or you take the good effects out of the equation, you're done. You're sunk.
Make a different thing at that point.
Just stop. You know, I mean, as we've seen, I saw Leprechaun Returns. I don't like Leprechaun Returns, but that's my opinion.
I still got to watch it. I feel like I've been saying that for like 4 years on this show. Maybe I'll finally pull the trigger. Just why not? Then I'll know for sure if I like it or not.
I mean, no offense to that other little person in the role, but like without Warwick, I mean, you got Mark Holton in it, for Christ's sake, and like without Warwick, it just does not jive.
Doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for me at all. And that's pretty much it. Leprechaun 3, it's fine. I know this is a lot of people's favorites. It's not my favorite. It's a decent sequel. It made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And good for them. But I'm reaching for two. Two is my fave.
I guess just on that note, if you haven't already, let us know in the comments, like, is this your favorite?
What is your favorite Leprechaun sequel?
Yeah, because I'm just genuinely curious what people think. But yeah, I guess that's Leprechaun 3.
Yeah. And again, we were talking about the first Leprechaun. Definitely, if you haven't watched the first one in a while, definitely give that a spin, because it's really excellent. It's a perfect blend of horror and comedy. And it's just really, there's a lot of love in that first movie. And again, I can't stress enough, if you haven't checked this out, this is the first time hearing about it, and you're really interested in filmmaking or the Leprechaun movie and how it was made and kind of the hurdles that Mark Jones kind of went through with Trimark and Vidmark and even about Ken Odland and again Mark Holton and Jennifer Aniston and Warwick Davis and Gabe Bartalos, all that stuff, he goes into it. B. Harrison Smith's I Need Me Gold, the making of the movie Leprechaun. Check it out. It's not a ton of money, and it's a really great read, and it's a breeze to read. I think I read it in like a day and a half to do for the show.
Sure.
I mean, total, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, if you really feel like it, fire up Leprechaun 3. Maybe that's your favorite. I don't know. I'm reaching for 1 and 2 and 4. That's my lineup. And of course, with the our Lord and Savior Rawhead Rex, that's the stack. And even I'll watch a very unlucky Leprechaun before I watch Leprechaun 3 again.
You're having like a full-blown like Ireland Land leg marathon lined up.
Dude, I look forward to
traveling there.
I look forward to St. Patrick's Day every year because Julie and I, we do our soda bread.
Sure.
We do our corned beef and cabbage. We get some Guinness. We get some red breast, and we just watch Leprechaun movies and Rawhead and all that stuff all day. And it's a blast. It's just fun. It's cozy.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And yeah. That reminds me, I need to get my soda bread out of the freezer and defrost that some bitch.
Oh, you didn't bring me any fucking soda bread.
Well. It might have already been in there longer than it should have, so let's eat it before it gets any staler. Future Sean, when you see this edited episode, make sure you ate that by now.
And don't forget next year to bring me some of that.
I will.
I need Miss Mary's soda bread, dude.
Yes.
It's so good.
Made by my mom, absolutely.
But yeah, if you want some more Movie Dumpster content, you can head over to patreon.com/moviedumpster. You can get an ad-free audio version of the show for only $2 a month. And if you sign up for the $5 or $10 tiers, you can get commentary tracks, mini-sodes, and live watch-alongs we do with you guys. And it's always a really good time. And you also get some other goodies with that. So if that's something you're interested in, go check it out and help support your favorite show.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, please like the video and share it with your friends. And if you're not subscribed, hit that button now. It really does help get us out into more eyeballs, eardrums, and everything in between. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, please leave us that 5 stars and possibly a review. Really do appreciate it.
Those reviews are really important to us. It's worth more than you going to Patreon or you buying stuff from the store. They really help the show grow. So if you can leave a review, please do that. But if you want to keep up on the Movie Dumpster Boys' whereabouts, you can follow us at Movie Dumpster on all of your social media platforms, or you can go to MovieDumpsterPodcast.com and you can find out where we're going to be at what events. We got one coming up at Tapes from the Crypt at the Philomoka in Philadelphia, PA on 420. We're going to be watching Heavyweights, and then there's going to be a live Q&A session with Sean Wise. Also, we brought up in the beginning of the episode, and I'm not sure if we have any left, but if you go over to MovieDumpsterPodcast.com, you can get some of the sweet... Rawhead red hot sauce or some of this Movie Dumpster Slime hot sauce. We might have some other flavors, possibly a ghost shark with blueberry in it. It's very good. They're very good. Super small batch, super limited. If they're still there, go check it out. We just wanted to let you know if you missed it.
And definitely drink them like this.
So that's it. That's Leprechaun 3 from 1995, directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith. I'm Joel Escola.
And I'm Sean O'Rourke.
Thanks for visiting the dumpster and happy St. Patrick's Day.